It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more. Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey, it's Chris Van Cleve reporting for the Rose Chat Podcast. We're in Nashville, Tennessee at the Music City Rose Garden during our Rose Chat weekend in October 2014. Teresa Byington's with me, the co-host of the Rose Chat Podcast. Teresa, what are some of your favorite roses in this garden?
Oh my, the Barbara Mandrell rose is beautiful, and oh, the sweet little Jimmy Dickens rose is so darling. And let's see, Mini Pearl. It's just a perfect, it looks like a tiny little hybrid tea. It's just a perfect shell pink rose. So Mini Pearl's here. There's a beautiful Elvis rose here. There's Blue Suede Shoes. I mean, we are in great company here in Nashville.
That's right, Teresa. You know, the Music City Rose Garden is right across from the Nashville Convention Center and the Country Music Hall of Fame, sandwiched between that and the Nashville Hilton Hotel. I hope if you get a chance, you come to Nashville, you'll come out and see this beautiful rose garden. This is Chris Van Cleve for the Rose Chat Podcast.
Well, hey, y'all. As you might have guessed, we've been on the road, the entire Rose Chat radio crew, on site this past week in Nashville, Tennessee, where we visited not only the Music City Rose Garden, but also the restored Rose Garden at the Belmont Mansion on the campus of Belmont University. Don't know about you, Teresa, but I can't decide which one of them that I like the best.
Well, you know, I can't either. I simply can't choose. But I have to say that at the Belmont Garden, I saw several roses that were at least 12 foot tall. And I'm not exaggerating, at least not very much. But then you go to the Nashville Music Rose Garden and you read the names of Little Jimmy Dickens and the Mandrell family and Minnie Pearl. And all of those names go right to the heart of this Tennessee girl. So it's a beautiful display of rose Nashville royalty. So, beautiful, beautiful little garden.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I Tina and I had the best time. And not only that, we got to eat some really good food while we're there. We went to a famous restaurant and ate just steak tips to die for. They were so good. All our listeners, if you go to Nashville, go to Demas Steakhouse on, I think it's 3rd Avenue. It's really, really good. Now, Teresa, I'm looking at my copy of the latest issue of American Rose Magazine, and it's their annual, Rose Annual issue, and I'll tell you, it is just filled with wonderful articles about rose gardens, like the ones we visited this past weekend. I just want to give a big shout-out to Elena Williams, who was the guest editor for the Rose Annual 2014. She did a tremendous job putting all these articles together.
She sure did. And I'm telling you, as you read the articles about these different gardens, you start putting them on your list. The gardens that I had not visited, you know, hearing all about them and getting the history and seeing it through the eyes of the writers, you know, makes you want to, okay, this is the garden that I need to see. So there's many beautiful rose gardens out there, and many of them are depicted in the Rose Annual.
Yeah, it's like I just want to put a big map up on the wall in the in the room here and just start pushpinning all the gardens that I need to visit. There's just so many wonderful gardens out there. You know, I'm just so excited about tonight's guest. Stephen Scanello is no stranger to rose gardens. He joins us tonight to talk about his work as a curator of the Peggy Rockefeller Rose Garden at the New York Botanical Gardens, as well as efforts to preserve heritage rose varieties through his work with the Heritage Rose Foundation.
Yes, Stephen is here. He's in the virtual studio, so stay with us. We'll be right back. There's more Rose Chat coming your way.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mice,
while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
Well, Stephen Scaniello is with us, and as Chris mentioned, Stephen is the curator at the Peggy Rockefeller Rose Garden at the New York Botanical Garden. And he's also the current president of the Heritage Rose Foundation, and in his spare time, he's the author of several books on roses. Hey, Stephen, it's good to have you back on Rose Chat.
Thank you, Teresa. It's always good to be with you guys. I'm enjoying listening to you.
Well, we're so glad. And since you were here last, you've added a new title, Rose Curator. So what is a day in the life of a rose curator like?
Well, today I had barbecue at the Pompous Pig in Anderson, South Carolina. That was a good little thing to do. I was actually shopping for roses up at Roses Unlimited in Lawrence, South Carolina. And one of my jobs is to create a very interesting rose garden, not just a beautiful garden, but to bring some more historical and educational value to the collection. So I'm in charge of all the roses, and I keep track of who's doing well and who's on the chopping block. And we're going through a bloodbath right now. I'm pulling out a bunch of roses and putting in some really interesting varieties to make the visit there much more interesting, I think.
Well, tell us about some of the varieties that you're going to add.
Well, Mike Shoup of the Anti-Rose Emporium has generously donated a collection of his pioneer roses, roses that he has been creating using heritage roses as parents. And let's see, there is, I can't think of one name right now, Rockwall sesquential thing or something. Sorry, Mike.
We put you on the spot, Steve.
You did. And I should have had that list in front of me. But there are 21 plants he sent us of six different varieties. And one is Alamo Fire, which is a brand new hybrid, a seedling of Dortmund, but it's not a climber like Dortmund, but it's a shrub with a five-petaled red rose. So that's just part of the new area I'm developing, is to have these wonderful heritage roses, these pioneer roses in full, right there in front so you can see them. And they're very clean, disease-resistant roses, and they should be perfect for our collection. I'm also, today, I picked out a whole bunch of roses that were created by Viru Girajahavan from India. He's been working very hard to create new hybrids using tea roses as parents. And some of his new hybrids are tea roses, which are more delicate for our climate. And others are hardy shrubs, and they're going to be in the collection as well. And the tender ones I'll keep as potted plants and shift them around during the blooming season and keep them in the winter indoors, you know, under cover in the winter. So I'm really looking forward to this part of the project. It's a lot of fun. A lot of research goes into this.
Well, it's something new for people to see, too. And what is the growing zone for your garden?
I think it's probably 7. And I hesitate to be totally committed to that because the garden is in a very unusual place for a rose garden. It's actually in a prehistoric lake bottom, basically. It's a big bowl where it's been placed. And that means that it gets the frost first and the heat lingers. So it's a very cold and very hot spot, which is a challenge for many roses. And so it might be technically zone 7, but in the summer it could be actually zone 8, and in the winter it could drop down to zone 5. It just depends on the weather patterns. But it's a beautiful site, and it's the original garden that was designed in 1916 by Beatrix Farren, who was one of the preeminent landscape architects of the time and still, you know, still is considered one of the best.
Stephen, that brings up an interesting question. You know, we talk a lot about growing zones, and, you know, they want us to follow those growing zones. But how important is it to you as someone who's a curator of a large rose garden and that selecting process, or do you just sort of feel your way through it?
I do. I really believe it. It's more of a trial and error type situation. I know generally that, for instance, a true tea rose may not do well in a zone that's colder than 7. So a zone 6 is colder than 7, and 8 is warmer. So I proceed with caution when I go into a tea rose collection. But within that collection, there are hardier cultivars to be found. So it varies within the plant material as well as the situation you're in. And you have to pay attention to what's growing around you, and that gives you an idea of what to expect for winter hardiness. So if you see camellias and southern magnolias doing very nicely, then you are probably safe with a zone, say you're a zone 8 or a zone 7B garden. But I do believe more in just finding getting onto the ground level and really seeing what's happening rather than looking on paper, and do mm-hmm. more trial by error, I think.
Yeah, great advice.
Mm-hmm. Of the over 3,000 roses that you have, I read that you have 600 varieties. So tell us about some of the other collections. I know last week my son was there, and he sent me a picture of a beautiful rose that he thought I would like. It was actually Brother Cadfael, a David Austin rose. So I'm assuming you have a lot of Austin roses in the garden.
We do. We have a large collection of David Austin's roses from his earliest to his most recent. I think Royal Jubilee is one of the most recent that we just planted. But I have to tell you that we don't spray very much in this garden. We're not completely spray-free, but I will tell you that the area that we do have to spray is where the Austin roses are growing. And I'm not saying anything critical. I'm not criticizing anybody's rose varieties, but that's just the way it seems to be going. They are beautiful roses, and perhaps they are not happiest in our humidity. We also have mm-hmm. a great collection of the Cordis hybrids, and mm-hmm. Cordis is from Germany. And over in Germany, they aren't allowed to spray at all. So they have to produce flowers and plants that can survive that kind of situation. And the Cordis group, the Cordis family, has done a great job doing that. Mm-hmm. And some of my favorites from his collection is a rose called Thanksgiving, which is a deep apricot-toned hybrid tea that has not been out of bloom since June. It's still blooming today. Mm. Another is Poseidon, which is an amazing lavender hybrid tea that has not been out of bloom since June, and full foliage and no spraying mm-hmm. at all, and incredibly fragrant as well. Easter Basket
is
another one. What's that?
Is Pompanella a Cordis rose? I remember once when I was visiting there, that rose was in bloom. There were several of them. It was a huge display. It just knocked your eyes out.
Yeah, that's possible. I'm still learning what's in that garden. I feel like I've been more of an observer than a participant
mm-hmm.
this season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just starting now to get really involved in placement. So I'm still learning who's who, who's where, and so I'm not that familiar with that particular variety. And I keep getting drawn to the ones that my favorites, like Thanksgiving and Poseidon.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have had great luck with the Peggy Rockefeller rose, which is a rose that
mm-hmm.
Ben Williams created, and it's more of a traditional hybrid tea, long-stemmed, and it's a beautiful velvety red. One rose that I put an order in for today with Pat Henry is a beautiful one called Dark Desire.
Mm.
I fell in love with it for the name and for the color, and it's a nearly, it's what you would call a nearly black rose with a so velvety red. Very much like Don Juan or
mm-hmm.
maybe Mirandi. And it just looks like it's going to be a great plant. It's one of the new Cordis varieties. And then I also saw an old found rose, one of the roses that was discovered, and it has a study name of Old Gray Cemetery. And I think Old Gray is in Knoxville. It's somewhere in the South. I'm not sure.
I've heard of that.
But it kind of looks like a Cecil Brunner crossed with Clotilde Super. So it has a lot of petals, but a sweetheart-sized rose. Beautiful plant.
Yeah, there is an Old Gray Cemetery in Knoxville, Tennessee.
That's it. Knoxville.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
where
it's
it is.
A beautiful old cemetery.
Yeah, they found this rose there, apparently.
Wow. Yeah, that's. Wow. I think that cemetery dates back to right at the 1850s Civil War era. That's yeah. So that that'll, you know, so many people during that period of time, you know, they planted a rose at the graveside of their loved ones. And
that's right.
I just think that's so cool that we're able to, you know, to this day, see the beauty of those roses and know, you know, to me, the whole rose thing is so much more about, you know, just a cultivar, but, you know, the reasons why people plant roses and that sort of thing. So, you know, that really speaks to that. So it makes me real happy that you guys are doing that.
Well, I want to include a lot of those roses with those stories of, you know, this rose is found in Knoxville. This rose was found in Hollywood Cemetery, another great cemetery for found roses. And these roses have survived in these places with minimal care, if any care at all. And I firmly believe that these roses hold the key to the future of roses for disease resistance and fragrance. So we need to preserve these roses. And I'm going to make sure that in the Peggy Rockefeller garden, there'll be a very big collection of these found roses. And we're also putting a lot of Ann Belovich's Ramblers, roses that she's collected over her years of gardening up in Washington State. Several of the roses are roses that she found growing behind the Iron Curtain. And when you know, East Germany became Germany again, Sangerhausen Rosarium, which is one of the biggest rose gardens in the world, was found to be pretty much intact, and it included many, many thought to be extinct American hybrid ramblers. So now we have a good collection of those going into the Peggy Rockefeller Garden.
Wow, that's incredible.
So that's my job.
Yeah. Travel the world and visit gardens and
and
I love
it. Can we apply for it? We want to be helpers, Stephen.
Okay.
Well, what about some of the modern shrub roses? Are you growing any of those in the Peggy Rockefeller garden?
I said we have Mike Shoup's Pioneer. We have most of the Radler series, the knockout types and the spinoffs of knockout. Of course, there's a lot of Cordis shrub roses and the Austins. We also have a lot of the Buck roses, the Griffith Bucks hybrids from Iowa. A lot of the Drift series, which are really, really good care-free roses. And often, you know, I used to think, oh gosh, when someone says it's carefree, it's not going to look like a rose. It's going to look like a colorful plant. But the Drift roses look like they really have that rose look to them. You can cut a bouquet. And I use them all the time with my private gardens as well. And they're great, easy to grow shrub roses.
Chris and I both are real big fans of the Drift roses, and this late in the season, I am getting a ton of Drift roses, and so I've had bouquets just of Drifts, and it's reminded me how fragrant they are, especially the apricot Drift. It's a very fragrant rose, and you know, you see that they are a shrub rose, and they're low, and you kind of forget that you also get a nice fragrance out of them.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's an example. In the Peggy Rockefeller garden, they are very low-growing plants, but the previous curator planted many of them close together, and I think he sort of crowded them, but it worked to keep them low. In my client's garden, I have a client near the ocean in East Hampton, New York, where I have Sweet Drift planted, which is a nice pink, and those plants are about 4 feet tall. It's just they're massive plants for that group. So it just depends on the location and how you want to use them. And when we deadhead with a broom, we go through and just kind of shake off the faded blocks.
Now there's the tip of the knife. Deadhead with a broom.
Deadhead with a broom.
Broom
pruning. Get up, Twig.
I'm going to try that. I'm so going to try that.
you have to study that carefully. You just don't whack it.
Technique.
You have to whack with elegance.
An elegant whack.
A light touch with a broom. So, Stephen, you've taken care of lots and lots and lots of roses. So we always have listeners that are new to roses or getting started again with roses. So give us a few tips that you would give to a newbie that just getting started. We want them to be successful.
Well, straw broom, first of all. choose your site. It's all about the site. It's about location, location, location. Because it's, you know, they always said you can what is it, a $5 rose in a 50-cent hole is not going to work or something like that, right? You got to make sure
yeah.
the soil is really,
sounds
really
like
healthy.
Richard Riddell.
Yes, right. And you have to make sure you have enough sunlight for your roses. Roses will grow anywhere you plant them, but they won't be happy if they aren't in full sun. And full sun means at least 5 hours of sunlight a day, and that's really critical. And they should be away from any aggressive roots of trees and big shrubs. And we've had great success in New York Botanic Garden by improving the soil with organic material, composted leaves with shredded wood mulch, all homegrown stuff that we save. And our fertilizers, we don't overdo with fertilizer. We use a lot of fish-based products now or animal manures. And we're pretty much away from using any packaged chemical fertilizers, you know, the way we used to do it. So now it's all about organic materials to improve the soil. And when the soil is happy and healthy and rich, it improves better root growth. And when you have strong root growth, you get good plant growth. And that plant growth produces best flowers.
Now, is the rose garden, it's been a little while since I've been there. Are there companion plants with the roses, or are the garden mostly roses?
I would say it's 99% roses. We do have alliums in the late spring, early summer for the gladiator allium, which is not the huge, not the one that comes of a little girl attached to the stem. It's just the one that, you know, it's really elegant.
I remember that.
The allium girl. She must be ancient. You know, she's probably old. I mean, she's been
kind of like little Debbie, you know.
We'll have to meet her someday.
Yeah.
But we use those kind of plant material. I use a lot of alliums in the garden, and we do have some annuals scattered about for color. I underplanted my tree roses. The tree roses are all grown in pots to elevate them even higher. And we use Euphorbia Winter Star, or I think it's Winter Star, as a
Diamond
living
Frost,
bulb.
Maybe.
That's it. Yeah. That was
Diamond Frost. It's hard to beat that one.
Yeah, that was stunning. And we use Angelonia. We have a few spots in the garden that just get a lot of foot traffic, and we finally stopped trying to put roses in certain areas and put down some annuals, and that worked really well. I would like to bring in some more perennials over the long run.
Stephen, before we get too far away from alliums, I've had several people ask me about, growing alliums. How easy are they to grow?
Incredibly easy. I'm not sure of the zone limits for an allium, but I know they like cold. I'm not sure how well they do in the southern heat. But you plant them now. You plant them now about 4 inches underground. You just shove your trowel in the ground and drop the bulb. It looks like a small onion in the ground. Cover it up. And it's a bulb that most rodents won't bother because it repels them, I think. And the only problem with alliums is that the foliage begins to decline before the flowers are at their peak. So unless you can hide the foliage under the roses, which is what I try to do, we actually go around and cut the foliage off as the flowers are coming into bloom. And then it just really looks magical to have these, you know, little drumsticks all over the place above the roses. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, mm-hmm. you know, the allium family is known as a natural repellent of sucking insects like aphids and other critters. And then plants that have an umbral-shaped flower head like yarrow or fennel mm-hmm. or dill, they attract beneficial wasps, the wasps that attack aphids. So we have an amazing crop of beneficial insects in our garden. So we stop spraying it.
Wow.
We stop spraying insecticides. We don't spray any at all.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, you know, we've adopted that in our own garden. And, you know, the only thing I have not been able to attract is a wasp that will eat a Japanese beetle.
Oh, well, I have a very good solution for Japanese beetles. What I do is I rip off their heads and leave the heads on the rose flower for the next beetle to see. So we don't have very many. The beetles don't hang around for a long time in my garden.
They know what's coming.
Of course, you know, I had this one photographer in my garden during June, and I watched, it was just me and her, and she was fixated on this one rose for an hour, and I finally went up to her and said, what is it about this flower? And then she sort of, I don't know, she seemed embarrassed, and she kind of ran off. She was photographing a Japanese beetle. I'm glad you didn't see me rip its head off. Are you done?
3 years ago. Please. You know, their own little, you know, colorful, but 3 years ago I could tell you that my roses were black with them in July. But the last few years we haven't had them at all.
If you want them, I'll gladly mail them to you.
No, I do not want them. I have another pest around here. I don't need them, but it is, you know, like millions to none. I don't know what happened. It's kind of almost eerie, but I'm glad they're gone, but I hope they don't come back.
Yeah, well, we get very few in the city gardens. We see them more at those open fields.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stephen, one thing I wanted to know, you travel around and you're in all these different gardens and you're all over the world of rosedom. What tunes are you seeing? You know, we've had 10 years of knockout and shrub roses. What are you seeing that's coming down the pipe next?
Well, up in Paris, at the rose trials at Bagatelle, I see a lot of traditional kind of roses coming back into the market. You know, the knockouts are wonderful for their purpose of creating color in parking lots or in front of a dentist office or by the local dump. But no, I was involved actually in the original knockout introduction. It was going to be called Razzleberry, and I stopped them from. I said, "You can't call it Razzleberry. It sounds like an implied gesture or something." So they called it knockout. It's knocking a lot of roses out for sure. But you know, there's one rose name which I think is the worst name ever currently. And if Bill Radler is listening, Bill Radler, why did you name a rose "Looks Alike's a Floxy Baby"? Really? And it gets worse. It "Looks Alike's a Hydrangealicious." And yeah. Then it "Looks Alike's a Bougainvilleaceous." These "Looks Alike" a loser, these roses. They're out of the garden. I took them out.
Now we're talking about them, so they're going to be catchy and going to catch people's eye, catch people's ear. So there you have it. Got to be catchy too.
I don't know. It's like when President Hoover, you know, when the President Hoover rose came out, it came out with great promise, and you know, as so did President Hoover. He came into office with great promise, but you know,
that didn't work out too well.
When the economy tanked, I found this wonderful quote in American Rose Annuals where it said Democratic rose gardeners in Texas were ripping out President Herbert Hoover roses with their hose.
Or their broom.
I have a friend whose grandmother grew that rose in front of her house in California, and she refused to give up. She changed political parties, but she refused to get rid of the rose, but she loved it. So she changed it to Franklin Roosevelt.
She renamed it.
So,
and you know the story.
It goes pretty.
You know the story of Eleanor Roosevelt and her rose, supposed story, where she read that there was, you know, she read the description, and she said, "I wasn't very pleased to hear that Eleanor Roosevelt, not very good in bed, much better up against the wall."
Oh my.
That's
so
the rose we're talking
about. Now everyone
knows
that we've got the rose storyteller of the world right here. He knows more rose stories than anyone I know. Did you write a book about that? The story behind the rose?
I did. As a matter of fact, it's called A Rose by Any Name. And
I have
I
that
like
book
it.
And it's wonderful. I highly recommend it. So what's
Thank
your favorite
you.
Rose story? If it's not Eleanor, you know, you heard that. So what's another favorite story?
I like the story of Harrison Jello, you know, a name for the man who created the rose. He was an amateur gardener in New York City in 1830. He found this yellow rose in his garden, and he actually liked camellias better, so he took the rose by carriage and horse and ferry to Prince's Nursery in what was then Flushing, its own town of Flushing, New York. And Mr. Prince saw this rose as something special, so he traded a camellia for the rose, and he named the rose Harrison Jello. And it became, as you know, a very famous rose, and it's all over the world now. But Mr. Harrison was much happier with his camellia.
Well, we have a beautiful Harrison Jello in our garden, and we're very happy with it.
And you're in Indianapolis. You're in the middle of the
yes.
country. That's a good
yes.
cold hardy rose. Good
yes.
cold hardy
yes.
rose.
It never fails to perform in the spring.
Well, and just so our listeners know, there is an excellent article by Teresa in the 2014 Rose Annual about this rose growing in her garden. So if you're a member of the ARS and you get the American Rose magazine, you want to be sure and check that out.
Well, let's get back to the garden for just a moment. That would be Peggy's garden. And I noticed on the website there's something called Rose Watch.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with it, that it's on the website, that they're tracking the roses as they bloom?
Yes, I'm very familiar. I'm the one that gives them the count. And, you know, I like that, you know, as the season begins and up until about now, we try to keep the people informed as to how many roses are in bloom. So we say, you know, it's 30% today, and the next week it'll be 40%, and then we're at 100%. And it's really kind of fun. You know, at first I was really careful. I counted everything in bloom, divided it by the number of plants. I came up with this 7.5%.
Oh, God.
It's a very accurate record.
Yeah.
Now I just kind of wave my hand across the distance and say, "Oh yeah, it's 70% today." Yeah, I got the name. I got the names of the roses that Mike Shoup sent me. Minnie Bell is one of them.
Ooh,
Fires of Alamo. Nancy Gay, which is his mother's maiden. That's his mother, Nancy Gay, Mike Shoup's mother. Rockwall Sesquicentennial. Wow.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yield Roebuck, who was one of the original rose rustlers, Texas rose rustlers, and Carolyn Hunt, one of the heiresses to the Hunt family fortune from Texas. So they'll be in a very good spot in our garden. You have to come see them next June when we're at 85% blooms.
Well, now for those of us who have to plant. for those of us who have to plan ahead, what would be the best time to
We officially open the gates on May 1st, because that's usually when the old roses start blooming, if it's a normal season. We were a little late this year, but by a week before Memorial Day, it really becomes interesting. And then up in, through the June 20th, it's madness, beautiful madness of roses everywhere. So the entire month of June is perfect. But if you love the old roses, come earlier to see them, begin the season. And it's actually a pretty decent bloom right now still. We've had a great summer and going into the winter very healthy, and there's a lot of roses to be seen still, and it's very quiet, which is great. Except when I'm there.
Well, you must be doing something right. The other thing that my son said, he sent me the picture in text, and he said, I wish I could text you the fragrance. It's just overwhelming. And this was just last weekend. So something good's going on there.
Cool. Yeah. Well, it's a special place. It truly is. And I encourage everybody to come visit.
Well, through the summer, I noticed that you have events. Tell us a little bit about what goes on during the summer. Are there classes or just events?
They start with classes. I'm not registered. I'm not teaching any classes yet, but they do have some of the gardeners teach pruning and other classes during the spring, during the appropriate time that you should be doing that chore. And they're classes for all levels, for professionals and amateurs, and they're usually on weekends. Then we have we kick off the rose season with a weekend rose celebration, which is usually around the 10th of June, that time period. And it's a wonderful Saturday and Sunday, two full days of everything related to the roses, including music outside, because it's surrounded by lawns outside the garden, and people set up stages. We had a dance troupe there last year. And I'm trying to bring back a members night so the members can come in and just maybe with a glass of wine walk around and enjoy the solitude and the silence of the garden. And then we have the usual gala type events. The big event that we work, June is wonderful, but the big event for me is the Fall Rose Ball, which is in September. Mm-hmm. So we have to just kind of time our summer pruning in accordance to the date of the Rose Ball. So we were pretty good. We were pretty much on target this year. So we stop deadheading at a certain time, and usually around August 4th is the cutoff date, because we know that all these roses need X amount of weeks to come back into their full bloom. And so a lot of people come, and to give you an idea of the age group, they sent out a memo as to where the ambulance would be posted in case it was needed. And I couldn't tell why they would send that memo out until the first guest came down the steps. And he was young at heart.
That's a lot of steps if you're not,
Yeah. So there are a lot of the older generation come to the Rose Bowl.
Something special.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah,
it is fun. And that's one of the things I've always insisted. I want to make rose growing fun. I give my lectures. Mm-hmm. I think they're fun, and our chats are fun. I just don't want to put somebody to sleep. And when you come to the
there's
rose garden,
no danger of that.
I'll if I see you standing around too long, I'll give you a pair of pruners, and you can hear, go to work. I brought my grandson there twice this summer. He met the only other Baltimore Orioles fan in the whole borough of the Bronx. And the two of them went off deadheaded all day long. It was great.
Wonderful.
So well, I love having fish in the garden. It's part of the fun.
This sure is.
So speaking of kids in the garden, now you were working with some high school students the last time that you were on the show. Do you have an update about that project?
I do, actually, yeah. One of the this is the Heritage Rose District of New York City, where we've been planting roses of historical importance to Harlem, which is north of Manhattan. Mm. So we focused on community garden areas, and one of the groups that we've been working with is a group that houses formerly homeless people, and it's called the Broadway Housing Authority, and they create these beautiful residences, and the people who live there have to take part in the maintenance of the building, and all the sites have gardens, so they become gardeners as well. And they've just completed a new building in Harlem, and we're now talking about planting heritage roses on the ground level as well as on the rooftop. I think it's a 15-story building. So, and then one of I just got an email while we were chatting from a high school student who was not a great student. He was one of those sort of, he just was a, you know, he, I guess they would call him, I don't know what it is, but he just wasn't able to learn in a traditional way. But when he learned about these roses and gardening, he just took to it like, you know, wonderfully. And he graduated last year, and he took this year off from school. And he's now asking me for letters of recommendation for college, and he's applying to horticultural colleges. I'm just so thrilled. This young man who lives in one of the worst areas of Brooklyn has found something, a possible profession, and he's good. He's a natural gardener. I brought him onto a lot of job sites, and he helped me as a volunteer in the Church of Intercession in Harlem. And that garden is absolutely beautiful. And we had a great program with kids there last spring. And we're talking about another workshop with the students from Florida Southern College coming up to teach the kids in Harlem about rose propagation and planting. And we're also the Heritage Rose Foundation is having an event in New Orleans November 13th, 14th, and 15th. We're going to do a symposium, the historic roses of the Deep South, and it's being held in the French Quarter, and we have a wonderful lineup of speakers all about the old plantation gardens, and we're going to have private tours of the French Quarter, roses in the French Quarter, and you guys should come. Go on our website.
Oh, it sounds like we need another Rose Chat Summit, Chris. Will our friend Peggy Martin be a part of this event?
Peggy is organizing it.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't surprise me in the least.
Not a bit. And that just sweetens the pot all the more.
It's November. It starts on November 13th, Thursday, with a day of tours of the plantations and up river from New Orleans, including Peggy's garden. And then Friday the 14th, we have lectures in the hotel Maison Dupuis in the Latin French Quarter, and then we have walking tours of the French Quarter, including the Rose Gardens in Armstrong Park that Leo Watermeyer has put together. So it should be a great event.
I am out on the website now. I'm going to post this information on our Facebook page so our listeners can go there and find it. So if you're in the state of Louisiana, you need to drive and check this out. It'll be an incredible weekend.
We have a really good registration right now. There's a lot of people coming. I'm really excited about this event. And it's going to be fun. And we're also going to have a live auction. One of my hidden talents is I'm a ruthless, brutal auctioneer. No one gets out of that room without buying something. I'm not afraid to auction something for a penny.
This is not the first time I've heard this, so your reputation has preceded you on that one.
If your eyebrows twitch, you have just bid. I can feel it twitching across the room. So
well, you
get
Peggy a hug for us at least.
I will.
Well, Stephen, it's been wonderful to have you. You're just a delight to be with, and we love what you're doing for the wonderful world of roses. And for our listeners, this personality permeates every book that he's written, so take a look at the book list. You will enjoy, you will learn, you'll be entertained by Mr. Spaniello.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Mia Nichols, who is a frequent listener of our podcast, sent me a tweet that she had when we announced that you were going to be on the show, Stephen, that she had found your book on climbing roses, which I was not, confess, I was not familiar with, but she was so excited about it.
That's a hard one to get. Yeah. Oh, gosh. That you know, that is, it's a hard one to get, and it's worth hunting down. And
I don't have that one.
Well, I'm going to tweet a picture of the book cover out, and everybody can scramble out to Amazon and get the final copy.
Yeah, last time I looked, you can buy a copy for $150. I don't know what, and maybe it's signed in gold, but you can also get it for like
$5. I'm sure. Yeah.
Do you get a kickback on that?
Oh no, I don't. I wish. You know, nothing is more disturbing when I go to a used bookstore and I see one of my books on the shelf that I had signed to somebody, and I will sit there trying to figure out who was Susan and why did she give this book away.
Kind of hurts your feelings, doesn't it?
I will hunt her down.
So so we've got your latest book is A Rose by Any Name, and it's just filled with stories about why roses are named what they are. And then, of course, how I met you, I guess, felt like I knew you after I read A Year of Roses, which is just a month-by-month guide, a very practical guide to growing roses in any zone, really. And then, of course, there's the book on climbing roses. And then I have someone gave me a copy of Rose Companions that you wrote, with Jackson and Perkins, which helped me to be able to fill in those spots in my garden, when we get naked knees syndrome.
Or putt-putt roses. You can putt a golf ball into them without hitting the thing.
Right.
I haven't heard that one. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, thanks again so much for being on the show tonight, and we look forward to hearing about the continued development and ongoing preservation efforts of heritage rose varieties, as well as everything you're doing up at the Peggy Rockefeller Garden, and hope to meet up with you soon at some of these events that are coming up.
That'd be nice. Thank you so much, guys. I really enjoyed, and I always do, chat with you. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Now, we placed a link on the Blog Talk Radio show page for Stephen's website, along with a link to the Peggy Rockefeller Rose Garden at the New York Botanical Garden website, and also the Heritage Rose Foundation. I'm a proud member of that organization, as I know Teresa is, and want to definitely encourage you to support that organization as well. Now, friends, we're at the end of tonight's broadcast, and I hope you'll join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.